All right, we're recording. Hey, this is Ali Amagasu, and I'm welcoming you back to the latest episode of Cloud Unfiltered. This is episode 2 of our most recent fall season. We took a break for a while, so those of you who didn't join us to catch our first episode back, welcome. We're happy to be on the air and sharing with you again. Hey, this time we have another non-Cisco guest, and we're excited because he's talking about something we haven't talked about enough lately, and that's security in the cloud. He wrote a real interesting article that caught my attention, so I asked him if he would come on the show and talk about it a little bit more. His name is Ian Tibble. He's all the way over in the UK. Good afternoon, Ian. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Hi.
Thank you so much for joining us. And hey, Pete, thank you as always for being on the show. How are things in Michigan?
Things are nice in Michigan. It's fall's my favorite time of year here. And before we get to Thanksgiving and, you know, all the white stuff starts to fall and never leaves, it's a really nice time of year. We'll have some leaves changing here pretty soon.
For the listeners, we were just talking about weather before we started, and Ian was mentioning how it's turning fall in the UK, nice crispy evenings. Same here in Southern California. What's funny here is yesterday it got down to 77. Was the high yesterday.
Did you need a sweater, Allie?
Well, that's what I was going to say. The funny thing is, the kids all were wearing long sleeves to school. Yeah. Like, Southern California kids are like, 77, chilly. Yeah, they're not really being prepared for life anywhere else on the planet. They have to live here.
Yeah.
Oh, so anyway, Ian, what was the name of the article I saw that you wrote? Pete, what was the article?
Exercising Dark Readings Cloud Demons.
Yes, and I think the subtitle had something to do with
Cloud Blind Spots.
Cloud Blind Spots. That's what I liked. That is what drew my attention. That's what got me to read it in the first place. So tell us what provoked you to write that article first, Ian, and what's your experience, what's your background before we get into talking about specifics of the article?
Okay, so my background is, I've been a security professional for pretty much 20 years. I got into security in the late 90s, joined a penetration testing and research laboratory in Bangkok, Thailand, with some of my colleagues from former Slavic countries. So our clients were all based in the region, so Singapore, Australia, Malaysia, Hong Kong, Taiwan, Singapore. And what was interesting was that those were completely simulated attacks. So, you know, most penetration testing engagements these days are entirely based on a fixed source IP address, which is very restrictive. The time of day that the testing can be performed, the type of exploit that can be used, there's all kinds of controls. I won't bore you with a rundown of my entire career, but those were the first 5 years or so. And then as time went on, I got a little bit more customer facing, a little bit more business oriented. And then up to, so I'll skip the middle 15 years or so and take you up to 2015, which is my first cloud engagement. And in that time, I've been mostly an architect resource on cloud migration type engagements, where either, you know, applications are being migrated from on-premise or they're being developed for the cloud to be hosted in the cloud, along with all the associated infrastructure. And I've been involved in the energy sector, mostly public sector in the UK. So government clients are going through a program in the UK that they call digital transformation right now. So I've been with the Ministry of Justice, Department for Education. And then most recently was a small project with HSBC here in the UK. There's a multitude. Well, I say a multitude. There's three main candidates that most people associate with cloud in the UK. I'm sure Cisco will be there one day. But it's right now it's the usual candidates. So Microsoft Azure, AWS, Google Cloud. I've had the privilege, I guess you could say, of working on all three of those infrastructures. So that takes me up to the current day, really. I'm also developing my own software called NetDelta. I won't talk too much about that, but that's also cloud-based in Linode in the US. I've got another one here in the UK, and a kind of backup availability option in Google Cloud as well.
Very interesting. Thank you for that background. Now, wait, before we proceed with our original conversation, what is NetDelta?
It's at the moment it's quite low footprint, and that's reflected in the price. But what it does is it does port scans at scheduled intervals in time, and if it finds a delta from one scan to the next, it sends an alert, and it does false positives detection. And I'm going to drop a buzzword here. It uses analytics to detect false positives. I've got some uptake globally, but I haven't really pushed it as commercially as much as I would like, because it's just me. It's quite hard to do all the development and focus on that as well. But I've got customers in Finland, Canada, and hopefully a few more coming.
All right. Well, everybody, there's your little pitch for if there's a pitch for NetDelta. So check it out if it sounded compelling to you. Certainly aptly named. Couldn't be more appropriate than NetDelta for what it's doing.
Right. Thank you.
So that article, I want to be sure I don't mislead people. What's interesting is you weren't really talking when you wrote your piece. It wasn't really about, you weren't saying listing cloud blind spots. You were saying, hey, Dark Reading had recently written a piece about cloud blind spots. And you're saying that maybe there were some false red flags there, or that in your case, you said some FUD was there. And maybe these things aren't as big a deal or aren't unique to cloud.
Yeah.
So I'd love it if you could go through some of the things in the list and give us a feeling for what provoked you. Did you read that article and it just all of a sudden you're saying, hey, this doesn't jive with what I'm seeing in real life?
Well, no, it does match with what I'm seeing in real life. I guess my point was the concerns that were laid out. There was seven of them, if I remember correctly, were definitely not unique to cloud. And I think those organizations that are struggling with the things that were called out are probably struggling with that on-premise as well. You know, they talk about asset management was one of them. Mm-hmm. That's a good example, because I think in cloud, asset management is considerably easier to do, you know, from the point of view of being able to figure out what are in your subscriptions. That's the Azure phrase. The Google phrase is project, and it's you know there could theoretically be problems with things like shadow IT in cloud, but if that's the case, then most likely the same problems will exist on premise. But if the organization has control over their subscriptions, and they're able to control access to those subscriptions, then you know, with an admin perspective, it's seems to me a lot easier to track assets in the cloud than it would be on premise, where you might have to engage some kind of asset discovery, layer two, layer three type scanning methodologies in order to detect what you have, you know, because what tends to happen on premise is the classic Excel spreadsheet, which gets lost when people leave, and you know, it's not properly updated. It's all completely manual. And that seems to me a much harder problem to deal with than the one in cloud, where you can see VMs in your subscriptions when you access the portal. One of the other points that was mentioned was logging. And really, I don't see a major problem. I think when you do SaaS, a serverless, it is possible to lose some control over logging at the operating system level. That's for sure. But the difference between logging in cloud and on-premise, it's not more difficult or challenging in cloud. SaaS or serverless definitely makes it more challenging. But that's not to say that you don't have logs from your SaaS platforms. And obviously with IaaS, you have full control. So that was just a couple of examples. You know, some of the others there was none of the others in the list that really struck me as being unique to cloud. You know, I think they definitely are problems on premise as well. And the organization would be fairly unlikely to be struggling with cloud if they weren't struggling on premise. If that makes any sense.
It makes perfect sense.
Yeah, I think my favorite quote from your write-up, Ian, was towards the end where you say cloud is just someone else's computer and just someone else's network. I think that sums it up really well, that if it almost doesn't matter where that VM is running, you still have some security responsibility. And we were talking in the prep session about like AWS's shared responsibility model is right in that same line too. So I guess, did you see, and I guess this is somewhat of a historical question, did you see a shift in the way that people thought about security when we went from bare metal to VMs? And then really, is this an extension of that conversation as opposed to where that VM is physically running?
That's a great question. I mean, I think it's important to qualify that there's, you know, I follow a lot of social media. I've got contacts in the US. You know, I used to work for True Secure. I was based in Asia Pacific. There's now Verizon Business. And True Secure in the US had 200, I think it was, yeah, I'm trying to remember. They had 200 active clients at any one time in the US. So I used to hear a lot about the stories coming out of the United States about security. And I visited Herndon, VA. And I just felt like there was a much higher level of awareness in the US. And, you know, guys like Dr. Anton Chivakin, who I've got regular contact with, tell me interesting stories that, you know, if you look at the situation in SIEM, S-I-E-M, or logging, it seems a lot more mature in the US than it is here in the UK. And I've done security all over the world. And I'm sad to say that the UK is somewhere near the bottom of that list. You know, the reasons for that are a story for another day. But I guess the point is that awareness was quite low before the cloud. And then going to the cloud, there wasn't really any perception that things changed a great deal from what I saw. But, you know, maybe I'm just unlucky. Maybe there was in other organizations.
Right.
But what I saw was, yeah, you know, I think just another computer or just someone else's computer or just someone else's network. That wasn't really a concept. It was seen as just another IT challenge, I would say would be the best way to describe it, as opposed to another security challenge, because I mean, on-premise security challenges don't seem to be handled particularly well in most places. If I'm being honest, you know, the level of awareness could be a lot higher.
Interesting. Do you think in general? Do you think the security set struggles with the speed of deployment now? Because it used to be, I mean, when I first started working professionally in this field in the early 90s, if you released quarterly, you were really moving, right? Like that was considered fast back then. And now somebody like Netflix is releasing multiple times an hour.
Yeah.
Do you think that, I mean, it's a pretty huge shift we've seen in deployment speed. And do you think things like, you know, lack of awareness of architectures and things like that in the security in people who are focused on security, do you think they struggle with that change in speed more so than in other aspects of software development and tech in general?
I would say they're struggling with most things. I mean, I know that sounds blunt and harsh, but it's frankly that's the truth. And most places probably don't have, I mean, they don't have DevOps processes, even in complex environments where there's 80 plus applications being migrated and hosted in cloud. And, you know, there's constant changes, whether or not there's development happening, there probably could or should be some DevOps processes around it. So the speed aspect is something that I would say speed has been zero. to be blunt, but then in other cases, it's definitely. I think there are, you know, I've heard stories about the speed of deployment, there's so few security professionals who have been able to shift from on-premise to cloud, or if they got into security in the last 5 years, not sufficiently technically oriented to get into it. I mean, you talk about Docker containers and orchestration and those types of concepts, as we mentioned earlier.
Right.
They're quite alien to most people in this sector, is what I find. And that's also what I see as a major difference between the UK and the United States, is that awareness in the United States seems to be higher.
So what do you think that means for the outlook of, you know, as we move, I mean, like, let's take this a step at a time. As we move from sort of traditional on-prem VM-based applications to microservices-based container applications is the step that's sort of happening now.
Yeah.
What do you think the risks are there, the security risk we might be taking on as an industry, because security people that we've relied on so heavily in previous iterations are sort of taking to this more slowly?
Yeah, I think there is a risk for sure. That's it's a great point, actually. So one of the things that probably needs to be called out is about application security and embedding the application security testing aspects into the development process.
Right, because that's the flip side of that, right? Is that the application developer is now more aware of security. So some of the things that maybe the previous application architecture generation suffered from, maybe they don't suffer from, because some of those things were built into Kubernetes, and some of those things you're forced to deal with as an app developer that you didn't used to be.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, it's actually one of the points that was called out in the Exercising Dark Reading Cloud Demons article, was about the changes in technology and how security lagging behind. So whereas that was given as a blind spot and a reason not to go to cloud or just to be aware of, not necessarily to not migrate, it was called out as a point that security seems to be lagging behind. And I'm seeing the same thing, definitely in the UK. So in terms of the risks that could be introduced, I think you're absolutely right. So I'm seeing the same thing. The security mantle is being taken on by people who are developers. So they're DevOps people. On premise, we used to see the same thing with network engineers. So the security mantle, the gap would be that the void would be filled by DevOps or network engineers, where security didn't step up or they failed to engage for whatever reason. And in the cloud, in development, we're seeing application developers make decisions about security testing, and the security aren't really being engaged in that discussion properly. And that's a problem, because whereas developers, I personally find a lot of developers are very knowledgeable about application security issues, like those from the OS top 10, for example. You know, everyone has different experiences about that. The attack mindset isn't there. So there's no, there's no aspect of risk. You know, it's you don't necessarily have to fix everything. So you run an application, if you do blind testings with a tool like Burp Suite, for example, that will give you some things to look at. You don't necessarily have to fix all of those. And some things that application developers decide not to fix, perhaps they should have. So, you know, the attack mindset isn't there. There's going to be problems. So you've got a group that typically isn't involved in looking at the holistic picture of risk across the estate. That's not application developer or architect's role. But those are the people right now who are making decisions about risk, and that's a risk in itself.
Yeah, so that sounds like something that if you're in IT leadership, whether it's a CIO or, you know, a line of business leader, it sounds like that's on you to somehow connect your security team and make sure that they're communicating and working with the application developers, right? Because otherwise, you're just hoping you've got an application developer with terrific awareness and that attack mindset that you mentioned, which he probably doesn't have, he or she probably doesn't have, and they're being forced to, kind of cover what may be a gap. And so absolutely, I would think, if you're an IT leader, then it's on you to look at that. And that's an interesting point. are your security teams communicating with your app developers?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I mean, it's on all of these projects I just described, there's no enterprise architecture or enterprise security architecture view. So, you know, there may be, it happens in the organization, but for whatever reason, it's just not really engaged properly. So that's where it comes from. But I'm also not convinced there is this awareness about the attack mindset in the security sector either, and how important it is. But you know, I think that's a story for another day.
Do you see this getting better or getting worse as we move forward? So we're kind of in this microservices revolution now, but things like serverless and even no code are beyond that, where in serverless as an application developer, I'm not even responsible for my operating system anymore, let alone my network or anything, you know, below that. And as no code, you know, as my grandmother is going to be able to write applications, you know, through a couple of drag and drops on some GUI and not even have to know a programming language, you're relying on the platforms to embed more security. So is that, so do you think we're headed for more trouble there because there's going to be more people writing applications, or are we going to be in less trouble there because the platforms are going to embed more security into their stacks?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point again. I mean, I kind of see it 180 degrees flip from that, but they're really valid points. But yeah, to answer the question, the second part about serverless and SaaS based solutions, where you're relying on the cloud provider to look after your operating systems, I honestly think that comes with a lot of hazards that don't seem to have really been embraced by the security community or the IT community in general. The thing about more people developing apps, that could be a similar type of problem where, you know, you're losing some of the granular control. That could lead to issues. But I see personally, I think a bigger aspect of going serverless and handing more responsibility to cloud providers, I think that's quite hazardous. You know, from the point of view of, okay, when we were on premise, we had system admins, we had network engineers, we had people who were responsible for various different IT stacks. And these operating systems that are composed of 40 million plus lines of source code are quite complex, and they have a lot of configuration options that are available to us that we can use to make security related changes. We can install patches, and if a patch install goes wrong, as they often do, or it breaks some dependencies, we can go in with admin rights and fix those. Now, in the cloud situation, it's all out of our hands, you know. So I think we need to look at it as hazardous. I think, you know, when you're talking about migrating services to the cloud, if, as you mentioned earlier, you know, you're losing the responsibility and the costs associated with managing your data center and all the rat's nests of cables and so on. That's great. That's absolutely no problem. But then moving to higher up the stack, I think it might be pushing it too far if we also allow complete responsibility over our operating systems with a cloud service provider, because of how busy the IT admins were when everything was on premise. You know, there's a lot of work to do. There's a lot of dependencies to solve. There's a lot of things to fix. And that's not all application layer stuff. That's operating system layer stuff as well. In the security perspective, I think the vulnerability assessment side is impacted because now we can't do credential scanning anymore. So, you know, if you ask a cloud provider if I can connect my credential scanner to secure shell port 22 or SMB ports on a Windows device to do a credential scan, the answer will be no. There actually won't be an answer. You know, that's part of the business agreement that you signed up for when you signed the contract with a cloud provider. So you're sort of running blind with vulnerability assessment. And then on the other side is SIEM and logging. Now, if you develop your own application stack You can get it doing JSON logs and sending syslog streams out to a log server at the application layer. At the operating system layer, you'll have some visibility of events at that layer, but you don't have any control over what's being logged and what isn't. So, I mean, these are just things to be aware of. It's absolutely not the case that don't do cloud because of this. It's more just be aware of this, you know, and in some cases, handing over the entire operating system to a cloud provider and never getting admin rights for your internal staff who are more familiar with the applications and infrastructure that's being migrated from on-premise, and suddenly they don't have access anymore. These are just things to be aware of, really.
Well, if you're taking an application that ran on VMs on-prem and you had all those Sec DevOps kind of people in, and you're just taking those VMs and running them in cloud, I completely agree with you. But in some of these other form factors, like there's still people curating operating systems, let's say in Amazon Lambda, they just all have Amazon employee IDs. So I guess that's a lot of that stuff. I mean, there's potential for holes that maybe they aren't doing everything that you're doing, but it's not like they're not doing nothing. And so and that's a different form factor where the same practices that work with VMs on-prem don't necessarily work with containers in the cloud or with serverless in the cloud. So should we necessarily be focusing on the tactics, the day-to-day security tactics that we did on-prem, and instead be looking at some of the higher level concepts that might better transcend whatever your compute unit might be?
Pete, you're going to a place that I was going to, which was I was going to ask Ian, you know, if we have some vulnerabilities, there's some trade-offs and honestly struggles that both on-prem and cloud deployments have. What are the best practices then? What are a few best practices that you could share, maybe, Ian? I think that's where you're getting a little bit, Pete. Your question was more specific, but I'd like if you could answer Pete's question, maybe expand a little bit to what are some best practices if I'm an IT leader hearing this and going, all right, there's some weaknesses either way. My staff may be struggling. There may be a lack of communication between security pros on my team and app developers and things like that. What are best practices as a whole that I should be taking when I'm dealing with cloud?
Best practices to achieve what end? Sorry,
achieve a secure cloud environment.
There's a lot of people in this sector who don't like the use of the phrase best practice because it makes it sound like security is a checklist or something. But, you know, best practices from the point of view of there are some things to remember and let's use that checklist to remind me. That's fine. I just want to exercise that other demon that a lot of people see with when they talk about best practices. But
fair enough.
Yeah. I mean, every situation is unique and you make decisions based on your assessment of risk and vulnerability. And what may come out the other end of that is a complete variable. You know, like, for example, it's not a guaranteed that we have firewalls. Probably in most cases, not guaranteed we have antivirus. Anyway, so the best practice is really hard to generalize on. And by the way, I'm not saying don't go serverless and don't go SaaS. When you talk about the differences between cloud and on-premise and best practices, for me, that's the major one, is just to be aware of what happens when you do go SaaS. You lose access to the operating system, and the way that your operating systems will be managed will be exactly the same as every one of the other tenants. There won't be any differences. You could ask them to do things for you, but they probably won't even answer. It's because, you know, that's part of the business arrangement that you have. So, you know, as an example, Config is an interesting virus, and it uses the at scheduling service in Windows to stay prevalent. Now, your cloud service provider doesn't really know whether you want that turned on or off. So what they tend to do is err on the side of caution and have it turned on. And, you know, the risk around this may not be severe, but those are things, it's just an example of what can go wrong, really. If you look at the CIS benchmarks for different operating systems, that there's a lot of things to think about there. You know, in the case of Windows, there's hundreds of controls that you need to think about. And in SaaS or serverless situations, that's all out of your hands. There's nothing you can do about that. You just have to make assumptions about what the cloud provider has done there. And in some cases, it's okay. In other cases, not. The other best practices, I think, are very similar with on-premise. For me, the big one is about serverless.
Pete, I know I screwed up your question. Did it get answered?
No, that's okay. No, that's okay. We can. I was pretty much done.
Yeah, were you? Yeah. You know what? I want to ask you though. So what you're hearing here? I know you're a big serverless advocate, and I know Ian wasn't saying don't go serverless. But is it really just when you use one of these services, like say you use Lambda, or you're just going to the cloud in a more traditional manner, do you just have to put on your parachute and assume it's going to open security wise?
Well, I think the biggest things is that is if you go back historically, like the difference between physical servers and VMs was not that big of a form factor change. It's a little bit bigger between going between VMs and containers. There's still the notion of a Linux or a Windows shell there. The biggest thing about serverless is a completely different construct. And part of what gives you better security in the serverless world, you mentioned Lambda. I mean, your Lambda functions sit on disk until an event causes it to get loaded into a unit of compute. And in Amazon, that unit of compute is a Firecracker mini VM that has a lifespan of a few milliseconds. So as opposed to a Docker container or a server daemon running on a VM or a server daemon running on a bare metal server, these are all legacies of how we did client server in the past. That those server daemons are running 24/7. There's a pretty big difference between the attack surface on a server daemon that's running 24/7 and a micro VM that's running for a few milliseconds. So just like the chance that you have to penetrate that unit of compute and muck around with it as a hacker, like it's several orders of magnitude different in terms of just from a timeline perspective, what that attack surface is. So when you think of it, so it's a completely different construct. It's a completely different way of thinking about compute than we have been thinking about for the last 35 years. And that's why I think it's such a big deal, is because it's a game changer in all those ways. I compare it very much, and this dates me quite a bit. If you ever did anything with DOS.
And then, I did.
And then you saw a Mac for the first time, yeah. Or you eventually saw Windows 95 or even Windows NT. Those are two completely different transformative experiences. And it's that level of change as we go from these, you know, client server daemon based application approaches to something that's completely different, because now we can launch a unit of compute in milliseconds where we've not been able to do that in, you know, Alan Turing never theorized that when he came up with the Turing machine in 1936, that you'd be able to do something like that. And really all of computing is based on the idea that it's really hard to spin up a unit of compute. And now all of a sudden it's not.
Yeah.
I love that, Pete. Great answer.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that describes some architectures, you know. I think, so, you know, if you look at Google Kubernetes engine, you see something similar there. So microservices are popping in and out of existence. But what it does is present an interface to the world that's less hackable than it would be in the permanently available on-premise situation. But there is still a risk. But then there's the other side of serverless, where they're VMs, essentially. You don't have any visibility about what goes on under the cover. But you have no idea whether they're managed in the same way as Lambda or what actually happens. You know, you can get logs from those stacks as well. It's not a complete disaster. And the other flip side as well, although I've been talking doom and gloom, the attacker's way of accessing a Windows or a Unix host would be via the admin ports. Typically that's what they'd look at first, unless they saw some other interesting ports. But in the SaaS and serverless situation, all they've got is the application layer, which makes their life harder to compromise a hosting cloud as well. So, you know, this serverless is far from a disaster in security. I think it's just good to be aware about the differences in vulnerability assessment and logging, though.
Hey, as somebody who knows nothing about how security works, either in the cloud or on-prem, I have a question because I feel like ransomware stories are such a regular part of our daily news thread now that all these ransomware attacks are coming through and companies are just accepting that in some cases we have to pay X amount of dollars. But do we know what attack surfaces those are happening on? Like,
actually, I mean, the serverless example is a pretty good one there, actually, because I think serverless comes out better. So, you know, if you look at WannaCry as an example, that was based on SMB ports, which wouldn't be accessible from a cloud subscription, you know. So in terms of vulnerabilities with VMs running in the cloud, WannaCry wouldn't have a chance unless, you know, by some bizarre sequence of events, you could get it from another tenant as a result of poor management that goes on behind the scenes. But that, I just think that's just so unlikely, it's probably not even worth talking about. So, you know, moving to cloud, I think on the macro scale of managing lots of VMs, as I saw from Jason Chan in Netflix, I saw his presentation in 2011 or 12, I think it was, on SlideShare. When you're talking about security controls across large estates, it's just so much easier to do that in cloud than it is on premise. You can manage it from a management zone, propagate all your changes. You can even go to full, just not actually opening admin ports whatsoever, and going down the road of just managing infrastructure from Git repositories. I don't think there's too many doing that, but yeah, it's all good, you know. And I'm sure using the example of WannaCry, I'm really sure that's a patch that would have been installed by cloud service providers as well.
All right, fair enough. Thank you for indulging that question. Pete, do you have anything else?
No, I'm good.
You're good. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Ian. We really appreciate you spending some time with us and talking to us about security and talking to us about your article. It was really interesting.
Yeah, nice. Yeah, it's nice talking to you guys.
All right. Thanks so much. Have a terrific day and stay in touch.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Thanks.